The Man in Line with Andy Witt. Men's Radio.
Faster by, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line today. We're halfway through this administration. The election took place in September 2021. So all the way around the constituencies. And today, the largest constituency on the Isle of Man is Eyre and Michael. MHK's Tim Johnston and Alfred Cannon. So we're talking about the north of the Isle of Man today. If you live in the north, if indeed you've spoken to your MHK in the past 2.5 years, then by all means get in touch. Text, email, call and WhatsApp. Eyre and Michael today. And Faster Mike, good afternoon to Tim Johnston and to Alfred Cannon. Hello.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Okay. Well, it was a long time ago. We sat in the Ginger Hall and talked about the coming election. Nobody could quite have foreseen what we were going to go through, but we're through it now, hopefully. First question, then. This is regarding the north of the Isle of Man. And it is from Fenn, who says, can you explain why there are a number of empty properties at Ballacobb in Balaff? I contacted the minister yesterday, who directed me to the government housing website, and he said it's a charity, not a government body. If that's the case, why is it listed on the site? Anybody know about that?
Well, I have a lot of concern about the current situation at Ballacobb. It was originally a charity. It's been administered by the government over a number of years, and more recently the clarity around that in terms of the responsibilities which appear to have passed to Manx Care now have become increasingly confused. I contacted Manx Care about this a couple of weeks ago, and I understand that it's actually now in a legal process where the ability of Manx Care to properly run that against the original terms of the charitable trust are being sought to be challenged, and also to allow Manx Care to properly manage the estate. I think the minister, the DHSC minister, has got a number of concerns about, you know, the future of this site and how it should be looked after in the future. It continues to be an ongoing discussion, and I would really like to see some clarity on that sooner rather than later. But that is, so it's a bit of a confusing picture at the moment.
Does
Andy,
it have
I'm
a
afraid.
Future?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, listen, it, you know, it's a valuable site. It's valuable housing. It's good. It will prove low cost, affordable housing for our senior residents. That's really what it's about. I think under the original trust many, many years ago was set up purely for local residents in that Balaff area. The terms of that trust and the way it was set up really, you know, was set up for I guess, the poor of the parish, but of course defining that and how people access that in a modern era is proving difficult. So we need to move forward to a much better place with Ballacobb, but it definitely has a future, and we need to get that future into a better position.
And the wider question of provision for older people, for care homes and for homes in the Isle of in the north of the Isle of Man. Do you get much feedback on that from constituents?
Look, I think there's I think this ties into much broader government policy. I, as you know, chair a sheltered housing facility in Cote Michael, the Cote Michael Community Sheltered Housing. I think it's a wonderful facility. It really does create a good community spirit and a home for for an ability for people in that area to stay in that area as they move to older age. But I think there's also some fantastic facilities in the north in Ramsey, and as we push forward, I think with broader government policy, it's certainly, and of course with demographics, etc., and we talk about that a lot, the demographic problem. But you know, the idea and the concept of having facilities, which we do in Comarca, we also got in Andreas as well with Cool na Chibna, really are positive benefits to the local community, and we should continue to foster those. You know, that concept of almost that sort of having people have that sort of retirement facility closer to their homes.
On the question of Balacob, any timetable at all?
I don't have a timetable, right, per se, but it is a matter of concern, and you know, okay, I'll be pushing for resolution in that respect. I think, you know, this view of taking the original terms of the charitable trust, having those sort of changed effectively, has to be done by a court. The DHSC will have to present, and MaxCare will have to present the case for that to happen, and then we need to move to a position where there's a complete clarity about the responsibility, the funding, and how people access those properties.
Okay, a note in from Shelley, who just said, could you ask Mr. Johnston about the state of coastal erosion now? Of course, on the West Coast, it's the worst coastal erosion on the Isle of Man, and then it was something that you referred to in your manifesto. What's the state of play?
Well, what we're seeing at the moment is I think DOI are doing a continuous process of assessment. There's been a lot of measuring getting done over the last few years, and a lot of drone work to actually understand what is actually happening on the ground there. But clearly, anybody who goes down there can see that, you know, it is eroding at a fair rate.
Yeah.
So there's a science of understanding that and what's happening, but then of course next stage is, well, what can we do about it? And something, you know, does have to be done about it at some point. Clearly, if you're living down there, this is a real concern. So we can look at the geography of it, but at some point we have to start talking about what we're going to do, one way or the other, because people living down there, communities, people with mortgages, people on insurance, they need some certainty. So we're waiting to hear some more detail back, I think, from DOI on this. I know there's a meeting planned coming up where the DOI minister is going to come talk to commissioners in Ramsey, in Kirkmichael about it. I'll be happy to go along to that, hear what's been said.
I mean,
I'm wanting to see some commitment to what they're going to do.
When you were knocking doors in 2021, I'm assuming this came up. People are very concerned about it.
Yeah, I mean, clearly there's a group of people living in Kirkmichael, yeah, who are overlooking this coastline and are very concerned about the future. And we get a storm and we see another chunk fall into the sea,
yeah,
and I'm wanting to see something done about it. Now, obviously, we're talking about huge cost, but we have to start planning for that. And I also know that obviously this is a wider issue across the island on flooding and coastal management. So we need to understand that policy, and we want to see what plans are going to come forward for Kirkmichael.
As far as you're concerned, is there could there be a foreseeable outcome of just surrendering this and just letting nature take its course? Or is it going to be mitigated? Is it going to be reversed? Rock armour? Anything like that?
Well, I think we have to look at all what all the options are for that situation. I think it would be, to me, you know, incredibly concerning situation if we were sort of stick the white flag up and say we're going to abandon a community to the sea when there are potentially practical things we can do to stop it happening.
Mr. Cannon?
Well, I've been concerned about it ever since I came in, and it has been an issue, and you know, all the data keeps coming in, and you know, clearly whichever way you spin it, you get to roughly, you know, people will argue about this till the cows come home, but you could fairly say, I think, that there's a meter a year disappearing off that coastline, and it continues to shift in various forms, you know, each winter particularly. I think the government's delay, prevarication around this has gone on for some considerable time. I think arguably if they'd acted when they put those initial boulders on down at the bottom of Glenwillan, where you can see, actually, if you ever walk down there, Andy, you'll see how effective they've been in protecting the area where, yes, they've been placed. But of course, the damage they then cause where they haven't.
Yes.
So in between, they've almost forced the water and to attack that baseline at Glenwillan, but almost protected those two points, would have almost become sort of promontories themselves now. So there's strong evidence that it'll be successful, but it's one of those things where really we need to make a decision. And yes, the data is important. We've got to carry on ensuring that we've got the right data, but also, you know, there needs to be some conclusion brought to this in the next few years.
Well, having been, your previous,
So the idea that, you know, okay, you measure it and you say, oh, well, we don't need to worry about it for 30 years, 40 years, 50 years. Well, you know, we talk about mortgages and long-term planning. You can't just ignore these things and put things on the back burner. So it has to be addressed relatively soon. We have to start looking at that.
Okay. And Mr. Cannon, obviously in your previous job as Treasury Minister and your current job, Manx finances are foremost as well. And to mitigate that, to put rock armour in or to do whatever is suggested to stop it, again, I mean, is that millions or hundreds of thousands?
Yeah, no, it's clearly millions, Andy. I think if you're going to do a proper job down there, and, you know, we're talking across that front from Glenwillan down to Ballira, it's probably costs are sort of ranging about £8 million is the sort of latest figure that I heard to do a proper job and put in the necessary protection. You know, and clearly, you know, as you know, the government's financing is under extreme pressure, I think, as a result of what we've been through with COVID in particular, and then the cost of living crisis and inflation. And I accept that, you know, there's a lot of pressures around capital projects. What we did last term was put about £40 million, I think, into sort of allocation for coastal defences across the island, and they have to be prioritised. And, you know, I have to accept, you know, that we need to do that in a mature and sensible way. But my job, Tim's job, is to continue to you know, to push this as a priority. We believe firmly in, you know, that the village deserves this protection. But, you know, we need to keep on evidencing that and trying to work as positively with people as possible, but to try and end up in a position where we can both effectively argue that in the national interest, as well as looking at it from just purely the community and constituency.
Okay, a message in from Ollie who just says, regarding the Ramsey Town Council, the boundary extension, are you in favour or against the move for your constituents? It would mean some residents paying four times the amount in rates if approved, on top of a tax increase as well. The boundary extension, Tim Johnston.
Well, certainly, when I talk to residents who were affected during the election campaign and since, I have found nobody who supports this move, Andy. I'm very clear opposition, very clear identification that people of Glen Aldin and that surrounding area live in Lazare and want to continue to do so. So I'm very supportive of that stance. Clearly, we had a public inquiry in Ramsey a few weeks ago, and I was happy to put a submission into that and to stand up and talk in that inquiry. I was the only MHK who did, and I felt that was really important to support the community, who clearly feel that, yes, they do not want to be part of Ramsey. They don't identify with that. They don't have the infrastructure. Like I say, you're talking about paying four times the rates. They don't have a connection to the public sewage or public lighting. They don't want that either. So, no, I'm very, very supportive of that area continuing to stay within Lazare.
Many people just ask, why is Ramsey wanting to do this? What's behind this?
Well, they say that it's about wanting to expand the town, the challenges they have internally within the town to expand and for more residents. But my view there is, and I think it fits well into planning policy and government policy, into saying that we need to be starting to look at our undeveloped sites within our towns, our brownfield sites. There's incentives there available. We need to start looking differently about how we develop. And sometimes there will be a necessity to build on greenfield sites, but we always need to be looking to see where we can develop on brownfield sites. I think there's plenty of opportunity within Ramsey for development. There's lots of areas around the town. Most people would say there's lots of areas around the town that are looking tired and work can be done. There's no need, I don't believe at this stage, at any stage, for the boundaries to be extended.
Mr. Cannon?
No, there's no substantial case for Ramsey's claim to expand the boundary at the moment, and absolutely crystal clear in terms of, you know, what they're asking for and the impact on the local residents is just not justified. So I will not be supporting any moves. Depends now what the inspector says, and then there has to be the respective motions, etc., brought to Timwell. But I will not be supporting any move to expand the boundary. But, you know, we are faced with a number of challenges as the island's, you know, shape is changing and as we move into the future. But we also need to, as Tim says, be clear about what we are trying to do and create within our towns. And I think, for me, I would rather that the commissioners as well were engaged in developing what they have within their current boundary and are really focusing on, you know, some of the derelict sites that are lying in Ramsey, and, you know, working with central government to try and create a better vision for the north. And I think, you know, for us, even, you know, in Aaron Michael, it's important, and we focus obviously on our villages and our village amenities, and of course it's very important to us, but it is still very important as well that we have, you know, well-functioning towns within reach, because they do have a broader range of facilities that a lot of our residents need to access, and whether that's secondary schools or main shopping centres. I'm not disinterested in what Ramsey are doing, but I really do think that commissioners of, you know, towns and town centres or local authorities that are looking after these areas really do need to get on board with this idea now that we've got to redevelop our brownfield sites and focus on what our towns are looking like for the future.
Okay, Sam. Hi, Sam. You're live with the Aaron Michael MHKs, Tim Johnston and Alfred Cannon. Hi, Sam.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'd like to ask them, how important do you deem our UNESCO biosphere status and our island's culture and heritage?
Okay, Tim Johnston.
I think it's incredibly important. I think that we are the only whole nation biosphere, and I think that's something we need to be very proud about, and I think it's something we need to make sure that we aren't complacent about, and we move it forward. I think it's a huge opportunity for the island as a showcase, a global showcase of what the island is about. I think it's important to remember that the biosphere is not just about the preservation of things, it is also about the working economy, and I think it's relevant across the whole of our economy, the importance of the biosphere, and it's something we need to do more with. I know we've got quite soon we have to sort of requalify, and I think it's really important that we work hard to make sure that we get through that, because it is something that's unique, and you know, the Isle of Man and our heritage and our identity is incredibly important to us.
Okay, Mr. Cannon.
I support much of what Tim said, and I think that's the important message, is that, you know, this UNESCO biosphere whole island heritage status that we've got is hugely important, but it's not just about one single issue, but it is about the way that communities come together, the facilities that are provided, and of course, you know, looking after the special parts that we have on our island and our island heritage. So a lot of it is combined, and I think it's a very, very valuable ambition that we should retain it, and we should work hard to retain it.
Okay, Sam, anything to add?
Yes, going on those words, proud, and we shouldn't be complacent, and our island is unique. Why is it the land on Douglas Road, bordering Castletown, which is going to be built on by developers, currently being excavated by an archaeological team in conjunction with Manchester Heritage, who are finding finds that some are being Bronze Age. Although the site goes way back beyond this, Mesolithic, etc., etc. And this is thought and has been deemed through planning to be of significant local to regional interest. Why is only a small proportion of this site that is due to be developed being scheduled to be extubated, and so far, none of the public are being aware of the importance of this site and what is actually going on.
Okay, Sam, I don't know whether you knew, we are talking about the north of the Isle of Man today, but we'll park that question for the moment and possibly come back to it. But there are lots more questions about the north of the Isle of Man that we're talking about, including one from Viv, who just says, what do you make of this, and she calls it an ambitious proposal for this Andreas renewable energy generation thing. I think it's taking place on Mr. Morrie's farm in the north of the Isle of Man. So question, two-part question really. What do you think of the proposed Andreas facility, and will there ever be a wind farm at Sulby, Mr. Cannon?
I think, trying not to get drawn into site-specific matters, Andy, given that sometimes these matters do end up in significant issues for the council of ministers at times. Nevertheless, approaching any of these sort of major sort of infrastructure requirements now, and here we're talking about energy and energy provision, is a matter of national significance. I think everything and any of these plans need proper consideration. Not everybody's entirely clear on all the specifics of the detail around this proposition. Broadly, I am in favour of finding ways on the island to generate our own energy for the future, our own electricity for the future. And I think, clearly in doing that, whether you're talking about wind turbines or whether you're talking about these types of energy plants, then one needs to also factor in other considerations. But broadly, we as an island need to move to a position, I think, and this does impact us in the rural areas quite a lot, of, I believe, doing as much as we can to provide future energy security using the latest technology, and on the basis that we can do so safely, securely, cost effectively, and of course taking in and factoring in the relevant local considerations as well.
Tim Johns.
Yeah, and I think we've got a long journey ahead of us when it comes to our energy policy. We talk about sort of through to 2050 and net zero and what we're trying to achieve. We know that we're going to have to replace our gas power station in the next sort of 10 years or so. That's going to happen regardless. So we have to face up to that and say, well, what do we do to replace that? And I think, as I've said, the importance of energy security is really important for the island. Our economy is built on energy security, something we've actually taken for granted, I think, for a long time, having that. So whatever we do, we have to make sure we do that. So how do we do that going forward? Is going to be a mix of renewable energy and likes of wind power, but also we need other types of energy on island that is secure. And anaerobic digestion, which I think is the main core of the plan for the development in Andreas, is absolutely works. It's proven technology and it works. Therefore, in principle, there's no reason to suggest why that sort of facility shouldn't work on the island.
And I think, if I remember rightly, that's going to be... it's going to basically digest stuff that's been grown by farmers as well. So it feeds back into the agricultural sector.
Absolutely.
It's
also really important for the farming sector as well, because like you say, yes, you need to be putting fairly high energy crops into this plant, and that produces the gas, but then you get your power. So it's to me a double win of potentially providing us with what are called dispatchable power. I think that's the key thing to remember about this type of power. It's controllable power. Wind power isn't. The wind blows or it doesn't, but this is the sort of energy you can control, and that's really important. So when we're talking about longer term energy security, these are the sort of ideas that we need to be taking very, very seriously. And if at the same time we can also provide opportunities for our farming sector as well, then obviously it has to be taken very seriously.
Okay, so we've got some calls to get to in just a few moments' time. Obviously, Tim, you were managing director, I think, of the NFU, wasn't it? Were you managing director?
I was president.
President of the NFU, right. So obviously, and Stoward Farm for how many years?
Well, I live in Stoward Farm now. I don't have any land now, any farming. I farmed in Andreas for 20 years as a dairy farmer. Yeah.
So he knows of what he speaks, because we've got a couple of questions regarding farming coming up in just a few moments' time. We're talking about Air and Michael today with MHK's Alfred Cannon and Tim Johnston on Man and Line.
I wish I had a better savings account.
Did you hear about Skipton International's great rates for their savings accounts?
No, tell me more.
Skipton are currently offering a 5% AER fixed rate account maturing 14th of March 2025.
Wow, that's a really good deal.
It's no wonder Guernsey's bank Skipton International offers some of the best rates around.
For details of all Skipton savings products, call 01481 730 730 or visit skiptoninternational.com. It's time to switch to Skipton. No withdrawals allowed until maturity. Interest is paid annually and upon maturity. Skipton International is licensed to take deposits by the GFSC and is a participant in the Guernsey Banking Deposit Compensation Scheme. See dcs.gg.
This old house needed new windows. This old house needed a new door. And with DPM Conservatories, we got all that and more. Now our bills are lower and the house is warmer too. We're cleaner and we're greener since we swapped our old for new. Stunning A-plus rated replacement windows and doors, expertly fitted by DPM Conservatories. Phone 612-333 or find them on Facebook. And swap your old for new.
EVF, fueling the island and fueling you. With a great range of fresh foods and everyday essentials at our filling stations. And always great offers too. Ellen Vannin Fuels.
Got some spare time on your hands? You could help our environment, help the elderly, help our children, help animals, help our community. It's Volunteers Week, and if you've ever thought about becoming a volunteer and would like to find a role that suits your interests, come along to the Volunteer Recruitment Event, sponsored by Douglas Rotary Club, this Saturday, 10 till 2pm, with free refreshments inside the garden room at the Sefton Hotel. Whatever your interest, become a volunteer. We'll help you find a great match.
In 1964, Manx Radio was born. Right the way through this momentous year, we are marking the nation station's 60th birthday. On Monday and Friday, the Man in Line closes with a revealing dip into the archives. On Wednesday's Man in Line, we revisit the architectural gems revealed over the years by Kelly's Eye. And Kelly's Eye will be on Gullah's Gargan at 5 on Sunday. And you can subscribe to all of our anniversary content online. Go to the podcast series 60 Years Serving the Nation at manxradio.com. Manx Radio at 60. Born to broadcast. Happy to help.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And we're talking to Aaron Michael, MHKs, today on Man in Line, Tim Johnston and Alfred Cannon, talking about farming, of which you know what you speak, Mr. Johnston. What's the sector like? What's the mood like amongst farmers on the Isle of Man?
I think it's a really tough time, Andy, and I think it's been a tough time for a long time, to be fair, for the sector. Not helped at all by the recent history of huge cost inflation. I think we came in, elected in September. By October, we were already starting to see sort of fertiliser prices, especially ramping up because of gas and oil price increases. It's been a really challenging time. And then, of course, with the war in Ukraine, huge increases in feed costs. We are a livestock-based, grass-based system on the island for agriculture, basically, and that's been a really difficult time. So it's there's no point beating about the bush. Agriculture is challenged.
Just a couple of basic questions. One from Julie, who just said she mentioned the fertilizer price, which has gone up horrendously, but she said, look, years and years ago we used to use seaweed and we used to spread muck. Do we still do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think not so much the seaweed. I think, again, that was something from a long time ago, and I think that's great, and it has great properties, seaweed, but it's on the scale we're talking about for what you call commercial size agriculture, that's really challenging. But no, as I say, we have a livestock based system, so manure and muck is very much part of what farmers will use on their land in their rotation, and to make sure they're looking after their soil health. But you also need, on top of that, other fertilizers as well.
Okay, and in terms of milling wheat, am I right in saying there was no milling wheat sown at all this year?
Well, there's been a lot of uncertainty clearly in the sector. We saw the closure of Ramsey Bakery. That was really the main catalyst for milling wheat sector. That's been obviously really disappointing. It's a a small but very dedicated group of farmers who were involved in that process. So there's been a lot of uncertainty, and it's been, you know, really frustrating and disappointing for them to see that happen. The good news is I think we're starting to see some changes now, in the sense of it's going to be a slow process. But, for example, we're seeing now Robinson's looking to expand on the bakery. And I hope that's going to potentially give an opportunity for Manx wheat growers going forward. But I'm not, you know, under any illusion that it's not some great answer for agriculture. It's a small part of what we do, but it's quite a small and unique sector, really, that in this part of the world to have this sort of latitude within the UK to have milling wheat, and it's something that the farmers did really well.
Okay, Julian, you're live with Alfred Cannon and Tim Johnson. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy, and hello to Alf and Tim.
Hello. Hi, Julian.
Hiya. I've got a question. It's actually, you just sort of teed it up on what I was going to ask, actually. Tim perhaps has a little bit more expertise, but I'd like Alf's input as well. Quite a high concentration of farms in the north of the island. Basically, despite the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's assertion that beef production worldwide emits a lot of CO2, a recent report from the UK Agriculture and Horticulture Development Board states that many traditional UK farms, and similar to the Isle of Man, emit 95% less CO2 than the IPCC's estimate. Do you think that an accurate audit of the island's farming emissions would be a sensible step? Because, as you said before, you know, the farmers are suffering here. If we're emitting far less, that could potentially remove onerous farming regulations, which theoretically would allow Manx farming to thrive, especially if, you know, if my assertion is correct that farming emissions here could be as low as olive oil production.
Yeah, I think you picked on a really interesting point there, and actually, yes, I mean, as a sector, as I say, we have a grass-based, livestock-based sector on the Isle of Man that historically, you know, we haven't seen the industrial agriculture here as we've seen in other parts of the world, even in the UK. If you look at our landscape, and you talk about the north of the island, but right across the island, if you look at the patchwork of our hedges, we've got something like the greatest length of hedgerows in the world, or in Europe, on the Isle of Man. Our field sizes haven't changed in hundreds of years, and that's fantastic for nature, but that's also obviously really challenging for agriculture and economies of scale. But yeah, you're absolutely right, and I think there is a lot of work going on. I know the NFU have been doing a lot of work on the island, and I think broadly through DEFRA as well, trying to understand and measure Manx agriculture and its emissions compared to elsewhere. Some of the challenges is around that is the metrics that are used, these standard metrics that are used by the United Nations, for example, on CO2 and also on methane, which is another very potent gas that's often pointed at agriculture as a major issue, when actually when you've got a fairly closed, balanced livestock system like we have on the Isle of Man, we're actually not putting more methane into the atmosphere. We're actually stable because we're not growing our livestock numbers. So actually, it's a great story for us that I think we need to do more to tell, really, that we have our meat is grown from grass. Livestock are grazing our landscape, and we've got a very closed loop system. And I think that's something that's absolutely right. We need to sort of talk about more.
Mr. Cannon?
Well, if the data and metrics, and obtaining that data and metrics, leads to improvements for farmers and a greater ability for us to promote and sell our goods, then absolutely the thrust of the question is, you know, should we do more? Then I'm absolutely in favour of that. And in fact, you know, it's not, obviously it's important in agriculture, it's important right across government that we get the right data and the right metrics in order for us to make the best decisions. So yes, if this leads to better outcomes for farms, for farming, provides our goods a more substantial base to be marketed and sold, then I would be all in favour of it.
Julian?
Yeah, another thing that you mentioned earlier about fertiliser. I mentioned this ages ago to you, Andy, about the Woodsmith mine in Whitby, where they were looking for oil and they found polyhalite. So they're now supplying massive amounts of fertiliser straight out the ground, which apparently is getting excellent reviews. And as much as I'm for seaweed as well, but the road and sea miles will be a lot less than where we're getting stuff from. But the other thing that occurs to me is, I mentioned also a little while ago that there's either no or very little chicken meat production on the island. I looked into that afterwards, spoke to an expert, and he was saying that the most expensive part of chicken farming is the infrastructure for the prevention of predation by foxes and badgers. So basically trying to hem them in so they're not getting constantly preyed on by foxes and badgers. But of course, we don't have foxes and badgers on the island. So in theory, I mean, you had the news this morning, I think, that the co-op is getting a bit of kickback because they've got genetically modified fast-growing chicken meat being supplied. Would that not give us some form of an advantage in maybe restarting chicken meat production? And even if, I'm just sort of playing with this a bit, but if we aren't exporting chicken meat because we're not even making any, could we have separate regulation that's less onerous on the island just for chicken meat production to start with, perhaps?
Okay, I'm trying to think. Was that, what was the commercial chicken production on the Isle of Man, Tim Johnson?
I think that in the past there's maybe been certain levels, but it's never something that's been on a particularly large scale. I mean, I think bottom line is there an opportunity in the island for that potentially? But it's for someone to come forward, I think, and look into that. But the challenges, of course, is our scale on the island, and demand and cost. One of the challenges agriculture has, and it's a perennial problem, is the cost of food. And I said it a little while back and got sort of shot down, but I'm afraid it's a hard reality that in the United Kingdom, and I'll include the Isle of Man in that to a certain extent, although we have to accept that food prices are slightly more here. Globally, we have some of the lowest food prices in the world in the United Kingdom, Isle of Man, because of subsidy and how it's been driven down to a point where food has become such a base commodity that we've driven the value out of it. And that's one of the biggest challenges for farmers and farming, is people aren't willing to pay as much for food as they did many, many years ago. So that's always going to be a challenge. So are there opportunities for someone on the island to do something? Potentially, but ultimately it's down to the consumer. It's down to people willing to buy the product.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Julian.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks.
All right, good to hear from you. And just one other thing, Tim Johnston. We've mentioned in the past that seashells can be used as fertiliser. Is that true?
Not so much fertiliser, but they can be crushed up and used as an equivalent to instead of lime for neutralising the soil.
Right. And is that does anybody do that on the island?
Yes, I think that it has been done in the past. It has been done quite recently. I'm not sure whether it's happening just at the moment, but there's an opportunity there to do that. Again, to be able to, from a scientific point of view, growing crops anywhere. Farmers want to use less fertilizer as much as possible, but making sure the soil is in great condition helps that, and making sure that your liming is right is really important. So that, again, it's a really important thing.
Okay. Let's get something from the answer phone now.
Good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, Mr. Cannon, and good afternoon, Mr. Johnson. My name is Nigel Sperring from Albany Tools and Albany House. We all know each other, so it's a straightforward and quite an easy question. The journalists and travel guide people have just been over for a conference here. Now, I'm well aware of the investment that was spent. It was all over Manx Radio and in the paper of £50,000, and I think it was probably very, very well spent, due to the fact that obviously the 50 journalists will go back and write blogs and magazines. One of the articles just come out in the Hotel and Cruise magazine, which goes on a platform of 1.2 million viewers. And it doesn't take rocket science to multiple read once people start reading articles about the Isle of Man and how beautiful it is and what we can offer, then I think we should do a lot more. And just thinking about it, once I realise how big the platforms are for all these events like this, is do we open the Isle of Man up for conference venues? Doesn't have to necessarily be for tourism. it brings people to the Isle of Man. And do we open the Isle of Man up? So for people like farmers, people in the agricultural business, people in the finance business, because obviously our background in finance in the Isle of Man, people, let's say, in equestrian, because we have a lot of horses and horsey people over here. So open that up for conferences, to people to come and have their conference here, promote and obviously advertise their own products, but use the Isle of Man as a bit of a relaxed zone when they're here as well. And hopefully when they go away and write their blogs in their magazines, that they put a little bit of article about the Isle of Man. And I'm sure that's a massive market we could hit and generate to increase tourism, increase visitors to the Isle of Man. We don't get much passing trade. And it was just something that I just wanted to see if that does happen. And obviously, Mr. Johnson, in your position, I mean, I must say that Deborah Heather is doing an amazing job in her position, and people are quite happy to criticise her, but you know, she's employed to do a job, and she's doing it very well. And I think the journalist and conference that we've just had just proves the point. So I'm more interested in see if the market would open up for bigger venues. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nigel. Mr. Cannon?
I mean, there have over various times been events, conference events that have taken place on the island. I think the emphasis that we're putting on that, Nigel, I suspect is not huge, because I think, you know, I think we will acknowledge there's been a lot of activity in terms of focusing on more general tourism and cruise ships and improving connectivity for people to access the island. I think there's a natural inhibitor, as you know, around cost and cost of transport to get here. But the general concept of us having, and we, you know, having conferences on the island, the benefit that would bring is a good one. I certainly would support that, and you know, I would be encouraging enterprise to ensure that wasn't a market that we were completely ignoring at all. But it is, you know, there is an inhibitor, I think, around the actual cost of travel.
Tim Johnson?
Yeah, and I think, you know, Nigel, it's a great question. And you know, I think it was a really positive event, the journalists coming to the island. As I say, fantastic opportunity for us to sell the island to the world. And I think that's something which is really, really positive. We want to see more of that. Certainly something a visitor are very conscious about, and the need and recognition we need to do more of this and attract more people, especially in the shoulder season. I think it's interesting that these guys came over in February and for their AGM. At a time of the year where, you know, we can, it's great that we've got that capacity and we can actually get that spend on islands at a time when it's quieter. So certainly one of the keys for the visit strategy is to try and grow that shoulder season. And if we can bring in these sort of events, that'd be great. Actually, for the rest of the summer, we're pretty well full capacity and we need to do more in that area. And we certainly want to build, you know, if part of the visit strategy is to grow our numbers to 500,000 by 2032. We know we need another 500 hotel beds. We need 500 of non-service beds. So all that work that's going on and that Deborah's involved in, it's really, really positive.
Okay. We're live with Alfred Cannon and Tim Johnson. They are Aaron Michael MHKs today, halfway through this administration. Man in Line continues in a moment. And also, as it's Wednesday when Man in Line finishes, we're looking back at 60 years of Manx Radio. This time, Kelly's Eye, the architectural heritage feature that was on Manx Radio for many years, looking at Riley's of Eden Park and looking back to Riley's at Quine's Corner.
Would you consider leaving a gift in your will to Hospice Isle of Man? As a charity, we need to raise millions every year just to continue providing our services. Your support means that we can give our care to all those who need it, when they need it, completely free of charge. If you're considering making a will or adding a hospice donation to your will, please give us a call to find out more on 672222. Every penny raised makes a huge difference to every individual and family who needs us. Thank you.
How do you really get to feel healthier? Eat healthier. ShopRite's Healthy Choice ranges make it easy and truly enjoyable. All over our chillers and freezers, food that even sounds better for you. Like the Gym Kitchen protein-packed frozen meals, Plant Chef plant-based chilled and frozen food, and Free From ranges across the store from pasta to cereal. Better for you doesn't have to mean boring anymore. Try our range of healthier alternatives. Available now at ShopRite.
Hello. I'd like to rent a car for 3 days. Just something reasonable.
No problem at all. We've just got a few rules to make you aware of. You can't go off-island, you can't smile in the car, you can't take any friends, it's £10,000 a day. Oh, and you'll need £1 million deposit up front. Any questions?
Renting a car doesn't need to be so difficult or expensive. With prices from just £50 per day, speak to Rex Rental Company or book online at rexrental.im.
Rex Rentals. I'm so glad to hear that.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Here we are with Alfred Cannon and Tim Johnson, and Eddie's been waiting very patiently. Hi, Eddie. You're live with Alfred Cannon and Tim Johnson.
How are you doing? All right. Excuse my voice. I've picked up a bug somewhere.
Okay.
If I can start just by saying, a lot of people talk to me, you know that, and they ask me to pass their remarks on.
Okay.
I think both of your guests will know that the government is not a very, very popular sort of topic at the moment. Nobody seems to be happy with them. It's very inconsistent. It's a lot of the things they do, it's not like they state it would be, open and transparent. There's lots of examples recently around our swimming pool. They're endless. Planning, you name it. But I'd like to talk about planning, if I could, while I'm
okay.
On.
We've only got a couple of minutes, so briefly, if you would.
Well, I thought it would be that way somehow. But anyway, to cut it dead briefly, two good things that happened recently, both for planning, which is dead rare. Permission was refused for a housing estate in Ramsey on the grounds of it was a flood risk, it was a rare site for birds, two rares, clover, salt marsh, so on. The other one was, you know, you're always saying you must have an attempt to use the brownfields. Well, you gave permission to Westmoreland. Both of those two are things doing things the right way, aren't they? So if this is a sort of precedent to be set for the future, very shortly you'll be going for planning permission for Airy Stane. Well, it's got twice as many reasons as the salt marsh at Ramsey to say no. But somehow we don't think that might happen.
Okay, listen, I've got to give the gentleman the opportunity to reply. We've only got 1.5 minutes. So first of all, Alfred Cannon.
So, hello, Eddie. Obviously, I'm pleased to hear that you were supportive of a couple of planning decisions, but obviously concerned about some of the actual, it sounds like some of the applications that are going in. It's always a balance for us in government. There's certain things that we can control in terms of general policy direction. So, for example, we know that houses have to be built at the moment. We know that we have to satisfy demand, for example, for first-time buyers, and that we've got to meet the needs of the population. You know, how that then is applied by developers in line with the laws of the land around planning really, to a certain extent, becomes a matter for other regulatory authorities. So in this case, the planning committee, who have to determine whether or not that application is suitable. And almost every single planning application that comes forward has some element of controversy attached to it. I think as the government, we need to do our best to strike the right balance in terms of our policies, but also try and make sure that the processes are fair and equitable. Everybody gets a fair chance at a planning committee, and hopefully that the planning committee will reach the right decision. It's one of those things where not everybody will necessarily agree all of the time with what is happening. So I'm just trying to strike the balance in terms of where we're going as a government, and sometimes the impacts of that are felt in the community.
Okay, all right, well, we're out of time now. I didn't get a chance to ask about the strategy for Derby and Jerby Industrial Estate, or the landfills, or planning in the north of the Isle of Man and housing in the north of the Isle of Man. But there's only 18 months to go, or a bit longer, 2.5 years through to the next general election, which prompts me to say then, Tim Johnson, have you decided whether you'll be standing for the next election?
Oh, we're only halfway through the first one, Andy. Yet. Okay. No, I'm not mistaken.
And Mr. Cannon, any chance? Have you any ideas about this?
Andy, you know, I'm really focused on getting this island plan through, trying to take us through the challenges that we're facing and improving everybody's lives. So that's my focus.
Okay, that's it. Man in Line today was on Air and Michael. This coming Friday, we're live at Ramsey, Queen's Pier.
W-I-N-T.
60 years serving you as the nation station. This is Manx Radio.
Peter, what's Kelly's eye looking at today?
Today, David, I could almost say OG.
OG?
An OG is a shape. I mean, there's some guttering called OG, O-G-double-E. Yeah. There's some Oriel bay windows which are OG in shape.
That's a technical term that I wouldn't expect to understand.
Well, after all these years, I'd have thought you'd have cottoned on.
An OG.
Yes,
right.
That's an OG. Anyway, it's a modern building. In fact, it's just opened in March. There's a plaque over there that tells us the date, something like the 24th of March or something. And it's a steel frame, sheeted in glass, like a big greenhouse, or not quite like the Eden Project Garden Centre.
The Garden of Eden.
It's what was J.R. Riley's new venture. Riley's, of course, started as was it J.T. Farragher? A firm started in 1882. It was down on Quine's Corner for a long, 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 long time. And now it's branched out into not quite something different, but it's gone from that horticultural and agricultural merchant, bringing in lawnmowers and things, and now it's more the garden centre. There's Martin Riley. We better watch what we say now.
Historic interest.
Well, we've just spotted
You'd
the...
You'd better come here now.
We've just spotted the historic interest.
Okay. We were just doing our usual critique of your new building.
Critique.
You don't want to tell us the cost, I suppose.
About £2 million.
£2 million. There you are. You surprised at that?
Yes. All right. You thought it was more.
So it's a dramatic change, is it?
Really? Oh, it's a dramatic. I've just come from Quine's Corner and I thought it's looking a bit old, and it's a shame really, because the quay had been developed, and hopefully it'll enhance the whole area, and we'll see more people down there. It's so quiet at the moment.
Well, now you have got somewhere for people to park.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's been the biggest problem. In fact, now you can't park there at all, so I couldn't get anywhere near the building. But it's sad, but got to move on.
Just churning over in my mind, Quine's Corner, it would make a lovely pub, you see, called Sam Quine's.
Let's get it open quickly.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Part of Island life for 60 years. This is your Manx Radio.